So let's get started. So one announcement, I'm going to be out of town next week. So we have two guest lecturers, one on Monday and Wednesday, Danielle Champney, who's sitting in the back there, and Per-Olof Persson, who's he has the office next to mine on the 10th floor, at least used to. So you'll be in good hands. Please ask lots of questions and come to class and all that. So today I want to continue with talking about improper integrals, and then we're going to move on to a completely different topic, which is differential equations. Okay, so we barely got started on improper integrals. I want to do some more difficult examples than last time. So here's a more difficult example. We want to integrate from 0 to infinity x cubed e to the minus x squared dx. And last time we talked about what it means to do an integral to infinity, that you need to integrate from, in this case, 0 to b, and then take the limit as b goes to infinity. And the reason this one's harder is that the integrand is hard to figure out how to compute. So looking at that integral, does anybody have any ideas of what techniques might work? What's that? Yeah, right. So integration by parts is a good idea. You could also try u substitution with u equals minus x squared. I think that actually might work out, but I want to do it by integration by parts. But it's a tricky one to do because the f and g aren't really staring at you on the board. So let's try integration by parts. Well, I don't necessarily have to make a table every time. So let's just write down what f is in this case and what g is. So what do you think we should do for f? X cubed is a good idea, so we'll try that first. So if we do x cubed here, and then we do e to the minus x squared for the other part, do you see what's going to go wrong? We don't know how to integrate g. So what else could we try? You could try switching it around, too. Then we will have no problem differentiating e to the minus x squared. But the problem is that f is going to get worse because the x cubed will turn into an x to the fourth. So any other thoughts? So yeah, okay. So we could try u equals x to the third. What if we write it this way? If we write this as x times x squared, it's really tricky. Tricky problem. X cubed is x times x squared. Now, any thoughts? Yeah. Well, yeah. So we could do u substitution, but I want to try to complete it with integration by parts if possible. I guess the example was too hard. So let's write it this way. If we write the integrand like that, can you see what to call f and g in the integration by parts? Any ideas? Why might I want to do that? The problem is we need to be able to take an antiderivative of g. And this g, we don't know how to take an antiderivative of. In fact, it doesn't have a simple one. It doesn't have a nice antiderivative in terms of e. So the idea is to take one of the x's that's sitting there in the x cubed and move it over to g. And then we could do the integration by parts on this term if there happens to be an x there. So it's a really tricky example, which is why I'm doing it in class rather than putting it on an exam. But the idea that ends up working in this case, you can put an x squared here and make g be equal to x e to the minus x squared. And then at this point, we can finally take the antiderivative of g using u substitution, for example. Okay, do you guys understand why we did that? To do integration by parts, you have to be able to take the antiderivative of the second function. That's what you're doing, is you're trying to differentiate one to make it simpler and take the antiderivative of the other, which you can do. In this case, we couldn't do just e to the minus x squared by itself. So we had to borrow an x from the x cubed term so we could actually do this integral. Okay, so that's the idea of this problem. So if you split it up this way, we would compute f prime for integration by parts as 2x. And if you take the antiderivative of g now, if I don't go to the trouble of doing u substitution, can you guys still figure out what the antiderivative of little g is? And we can go through the u substitution, but do you guys see it on the board? Like, sort of visualize what's going to happen when you take the antiderivative of this? If not, that's okay. We can go through it with u substitution. I probably should go through it with you. Okay, so what we want to do is compute the antiderivative of x e to the minus x squared. And so what you do, what should u be in this case? Yeah, sure. So u equals minus x squared, and du is equal to minus 2x dx. And we happen to have an x in the integrand already. So this one is going to be the... So what I usually like to do with u substitution is rewrite it in a way that the right thing is sitting here. In this case, what we need is minus 2x dx. So I'm putting the minus 2x dx here all together, and then the minus 1/2 is there to cancel with the minus 2. So I haven't changed anything yet aside from grouping the du together. So that's our standard technique for doing u substitution. And if you take the antiderivative of this one, you'll end up with minus 1/2. Well, whoops, I need to actually write the u. So it's minus 1/2 integral of e to the u times du. Yeah. Oh, the first x, I moved it over to be next to the dx just so that we could group this whole thing into du. That was the reason why it was a good idea to take one of the x's out of the x cubed and group it with the e to the minus x squared, is that this was the piece that you need for the u substitution method to work. You need to have the du sitting in the integrand already. And it wasn't if we started with just e to the minus x squared by itself. It is if you put the x with it, but it isn't really, again, if you leave it all as x cubed, which is why this is a really hard problem. Okay, so having done this, we've grouped the minus 2x dx together and called it du, and then this thing turned into e to the u since u is minus x squared, and the minus 1/2 just carries down since it's just a constant factor. Okay, so this we know how to integrate. Integral of e to the u du is just going to give you e to the u again. So we have minus 1/2 e to the u, and then if you plug this thing back in, you'll end up with minus 1/2 e to the minus x squared. So that's our little side calculation to figure out what big G is. Big G is now minus 1/2 e to the minus x squared. All right, and so our integration by parts, if I hadn't written this hint here, would be that you, so we have the integral of f, little f, little g at the beginning. It's now little f, big G, so that's minus x squared over 2, e to the minus x squared. And then we have to add, subtract the product of these, and the minus sign will go away because of the subtraction, but perhaps I better not do that step all at once. So it's minus the integral of f times g, or f prime times g, 2x times minus 1/2 e to the minus x squared. And sorry, the board got crowded there. All right? So, and I'm still integrating from 0 to infinity, so I guess I better evaluate my limits. So this is 0 to infinity, and this is 0 to infinity. And we'll talk about the limits in a second, but first I want to make sure we can do all of the integrals that are there. So perhaps I should have just forgotten about the limits for the time being and figured out the antiderivative. Okay, so are you guys with me once we figured out to split up x cubed into x times x squared? We did that so that you could actually compute the antiderivative of little g. All right, so once you've got that, now we're faced with another integral, which actually happens to be of the same type we just did. So you end up with, let's drop the limits for the time being. So we're dealing with minus x squared over 2 e to the minus x squared, and then we have plus this integral from 0 no more limits of negative or of x times e to the minus x squared. All right, so that's our antiderivative of x cubed e to the minus x squared dx. It ends up being this. And who can tell me the antiderivative of this? It's right there. That's right. So we end up with this is the integral from of x cubed e to the minus x squared dx is equal to this, and then it ends up being equal to minus or x squared over 2 e to the minus x squared, and then we just copy our formula for there, which is another minus 1/2 e to the minus x squared. Okay, so that's a crazy integral to be able to do, but we can do it by integration by parts if we're clever at the beginning and split it up. Now we come to the part where we integrate from 0 to infinity. So the original problem was this limit. So what we need to do is compute the limit 0 to infinity of of x cubed e to the minus x squared dx is equal to the limit as b goes to infinity of this all evaluated at b minus this evaluated at 0. So if I plug in b, well, I better write the integral down. So 0 to b, x cubed e to the minus x squared dx. And then we just showed what this what the integrand was. And so you'll end up with the limit as b goes to infinity of... So I'm going to take this thing and plug in B. Yeah, question? So this was the integral of G, that's right. So this is our big G here. Yeah, and this was F prime. And this was F here, and this was G. Well, the F was actually just up there. Okay, great. Okay, so once we figured out the antiderivative of the thing, now we can take the limit as b goes to infinity. And so you end up, when you evaluate this thing at b, you get minus b squared over 2 times e to the minus b squared and minus 1/2 e to the minus b squared. And then we have to subtract what happens at 0. So this is going to be plus 0 squared over 2 e to the minus 0, or e to the 0, and then plus 1/2 e to the 0. Okay, do you see where the pluses came from? It's minus minus. I evaluated the antiderivative here at b. So I basically did this. I went from 0 to b with this expression. So the first part over there is this with b, minus b squared e to the minus b squared. And then these guys are coming in from the negative that's in the bottom evaluation part. Okay, so we're almost there. The problem is now that, so who can tell me the limit as b goes to infinity of this term? 1/2 e to the minus b squared. Yeah, 0, that's right. Exponentials decay when you have a minus sign. So when b gets big, e to the minus big is e to the, you know, very negative, goes to zero. So that term is zero. This term, however, has a big times a small, and big times small doesn't always, you know, it can either go to infinity, it can be a constant, or it can go to zero. So we have to figure out this limit, and I believe you guys learn about L'Hopital's rule in 16a. Is that true or not true? It's not true? Okay. If it's not true, then I should just tell you, I think, that the exponential decay will beat polynomial growth. So it turns out that exponential decay beats polynomial growth, which I'm sure is equally as cryptic as doing L'Hopital's rule. But you can show that if you have b squared here times this exponential, the exponential goes to zero. Like if you think of b as being 100, you're talking here would be 10,000, and here is e to the minus 10,000. So e to the minus 10,000 is way smaller than, you know, multiplied by 10,000, that's hardly anything. So it turns out this limit ends up being zero as well as this one. The b squared here just doesn't have very much effect on how quickly e to the minus b squared is going to zero. So the answer in the end is going to be equal to zero plus zero plus zero plus 1/2. So that equals 1/2. And the picture, if you were to draw this thing, at the beginning, e to the minus x squared is close to 1, so the picture looks something like this, and then eventually the decay of e to the minus x squared wins. And so this is the area that we just computed. This is a plot of x cubed. E to the minus x squared. Okay, so I told you that was a harder example. Yeah, that's definitely the hardest example we'll see on the as an example to take an antiderivative of. Did you guys follow the steps? I think the main thing I wanted to get across is that sometimes when you're looking at an integrand and you're trying to think of something to do with integration by parts, sometimes you have to be really clever about how you split things up into f's and g's. And like this is one of those cases where looking at g, in order to take the antiderivative of g, you need to borrow an x from the x cubed. Yeah. You probably could, but then the problem is if you said u equals x squared, that's probably what you'd try, right? Negative x squared. Then when you write x cubed in terms of u, it's going to be like u to the 3/2. Okay, well, like I said, I thought you could probably do this by u substitution. I just wanted to kind of think about the integration by parts as an example where the you might have to split up the x. So I was trying to say at the beginning we probably could do it by u substitution as well. I didn't try it in advance. Okay, so if there aren't questions, let's move on to other topics of these improper integrals. Okay, so... So let's do some examples that are not as difficult. So sometimes the limit doesn't exist. Yeah, I think I see what you mean. So one of the x's will come out in the u substitution as x dx, and then you'll have an x squared. Yeah, and that's just u. So then you'd have an integration by parts again, but it would be a simpler one with u e to the minus u, or e to the u, I suppose. Okay, right. So that one, I guess it's better to do the u substitution. All right. So sometimes the limit doesn't exist. In that case, we say that the integral diverges. All right, and so here are some examples. So if I integrate from 0 to infinity x times dx, all right, so but without doing anything, we can kind of see that this integral shouldn't converge to anything. You're talking about finding the area under this line going off to infinity. And so you can see right away that the area under here is infinite. And so if the integral turns out to go to infinity, you still say it diverges. You could say it equals infinity. But so carrying this out, we talk about you take the limit as b goes to infinity of x squared over 2 from 0 to b. And then we go ahead and plug it all in. So you end up with the limit as b goes to infinity of b squared over 2 minus 0 squared over 2. And as b gets bigger and bigger, b squared is even bigger. So this is infinity. And so if you don't get a finite number here, then you say the integral diverges. So that's the concept of divergent integrals. It's not always obvious like this that the area is going to go to infinity. Like if I were to do the integral from say, 1 to infinity of 1 over x dx, it looks like it has the potential to go to be a finite number. If you draw this thing, the graph is going to 0. But the question is, in the limit, as you go further and further out, does this area here approach a finite number, or does it just keep growing off to infinity? And in this particular case, so what is the antiderivative of 1 over x? Ln, yes, okay. Ln of x from 1 to b. So that's what we write when we're doing an improper integral. And then ln of 1 equals 0, so you end up with the limit as b goes to infinity of ln of b minus ln of 1, this guy being 0. And what's the limit as b goes to infinity of natural log of b? Does anybody know? So I heard 0. Any other ideas? Infinity, right. So if you know your graph of log, so it basically looks like this. As x increases, the logarithm continues to grow, but it grows more and more slowly as you go out there. And that makes sense from this picture. I mean, a way to define the log is you compute the area under this curve as you go out. So the slope here is getting smaller and smaller because the height of the curve is getting smaller and smaller. But this still actually grows as big as you want if you go far enough out there. You just have to go exponentially far to go sort of linearly high. So the limit as b goes to infinity of natural log of b turns out to be infinite as well. Just like this case, this one diverges. So you end up with infinity since log of b gets as big as you want by making b big. So that is also diverges. But just a small modification of it will cause it to converge. Okay, so so the integral from 1 to infinity of 1 over x squared dx turns out to converge. The graph looks kind of similar, but when you square a small number, it gets even smaller, and when you square a big number, it gets bigger. So the graph actually is a little bit steeper and goes to 0 a little bit faster as you go out there. It turns out that small difference, squaring the denominator versus not squaring it, makes this integral, which diverges, into a convergent integral. So this guy, if you integrate it, will give you the limit as b goes to infinity of, what's the antiderivative of 1 over x squared? Anybody? minus 1 over x. Yeah, so think of it as x to the minus 2. Then you increase the exponent to minus 1, and then you divide by that exponent. So the minus 1 is downstairs, and you end up with minus 1 over x from 1 to from 1 to b. And this will give you limit as b goes to infinity of minus 1 over b plus 1. And 1 over b is fine. As b goes to infinity, that goes to 0. So you'll end up with 0 plus 1 equals 1. All right, so that's just a small change to the form of the integrand by putting the 2 there. We'll take it from a divergent integral to a convergent integral. All right, things don't always go to 0 or infinity. I mean, things don't always go to infinity when they diverge. An example where that happens is if I integrate from 0 to infinity cosine x dx. So this cosine doesn't, it's oscillating between 1 and minus 1. And so if you compute the limit here, you'll take the limit as b goes to infinity. Antiderivative of cosine is sine. So we have sine x from 0 to b. And this will give us limit as b goes to infinity of sine b minus sine 0. This guy being 0. And so if you draw a picture of sine, I guess we're dealing b here. If you draw a picture of sine, as you go out, it just keeps oscillating. So it doesn't approach a well-defined limit. In all the other examples we've had, the term where b remains at the end ends at this thing goes to 0 or something. In this case, you can't say that this is approaching 0 or 1 or minus 1 because it's going back and forth between plus and minus 1. So this integral also diverges, and it doesn't do it in this way where the answer is going to infinity. It just keeps oscillating, so you can't say that it has a well-defined limit. So this also diverges, so it does not exist. Since sine of b oscillates between zero, minus 1 and 1. Okay, so if it's oscillating between minus 1 and 1 forever, then it's not approaching any particular number. So you have to say that this integral also diverges. Okay, is that clear? So those are basically the things that can go wrong. Either the area is going to infinity, and then you say the integral diverges, or the integrand may not go to infinity, but the limit doesn't exist because it's oscillating between two numbers. Or it could be oscillating and growing at the same time, where it just becomes more and more oscillatory as you go out. All right. So that just about wraps up our improper integrals. There is a situation where you want to integrate from minus infinity to some number, or minus infinity to infinity. And so we define that in a very similar way. So we define integral from minus infinity to b f of x dx is defined to be the limit as a goes to minus infinity. Integral from a to b of f of x dx. All right? That's just a definition. So we could repeat some of our examples when the left endpoint's going off to minus infinity instead of the right endpoint going to plus infinity. And then there's this other thing, and I think this looks weird when you see it for the first time. You write integral from minus infinity to infinity of f of x dx. What our book is doing is breaking this up into two integrals. So they want to deal with the limiting behavior at minus infinity and the behavior at plus infinity separately. And when you integrate something from A to B, you can always split that into the integral from A to something in between, and that something in between to B. So what our book does here in their definition is just say it's defined to be the integral from minus infinity to 0, f of x dx, plus the integral from 0 to infinity, f of x dx. And they're doing this just to make sure that each of these integrals independently has a limit. So the requirement is you need both integrals to converge. Okay, this is also just a definition. There's nothing special about 0. It's just somehow 0 is the nicest number between minus infinity and infinity. So they split it up at what seems like the halfway point and just defined it to be the sum of these two things. In practice, you'd never actually do that. But I think the point is that you really need to make sure that this integral from here to here converges and this one also converges. And you could have stopped anywhere other than 0. As long as it's like minus infinity to 5 and 5 to infinity, as long as these are the same. Okay, so in practice, though, what you really do, you just write them both down and take both limits. So really, you're probably not going to split it up. You're not going to stop at 0. You're just going to do this. And make sure you take your limits independently so that like you don't want this to be minus b and this to be plus b. You need them to be independent. So as long as you do that, as long as you evaluate this thing with an a and a b and take the limits, you'll be in good shape for these problems. You don't actually have to break it up. Okay, any questions on that? All right. There's a statement in the book. So I think it's the coolest integral in the world, or one of them. So it's the integral from minus infinity to infinity of e to the minus x squared dx. And it turns out the answer, I think I need to divide it by 2 if I'm going to match what the book is doing. And the book tells you this is square root of 2 pi. And I was thinking of showing you why this is true, but now I'm starting to question whether that's a good idea the way the first example went. But, I mean, I'd like to have a vote. Would people like to see this? It's really interesting, I think. Okay, people would like it. Good, okay. So, okay, who doesn't want to see it? That's a probably better question. Okay, so nobody's going to say, right? all right, well, it's not that hard. It doesn't take that long to explain. And don't worry, it's not like an integral you're required to be able to do on the exam. But I think it's fun sometimes to see sort of neat tricks. And I think this one was thought up by Gauss. So it's one of those neat ideas. So what you do to prove this is you observe. So note that A is also equal to the integral from minus infinity to infinity e to the minus y squared over 2 dy. That's just a change of the integration variable. Doesn't matter what you call your integrand variable. Since it's a definite integral from minus infinity to infinity, I'm free to change the symbol I use inside there. So the trick that I think Gauss came up with, and I'm not totally sure of the history, but probably Euler knew how to do it too. So anyway, so if you do this thing, you can write a squared as the product of a times this integral from minus infinity to infinity of e to the minus y squared over 2 dy. So I've split up a into two pieces. One of them I just left as a, and the other one I turned into an integral. All right, so really I haven't done anything. I just took one of my a's and wrote it out. So the main thing to realize is you can take the a inside of the integrand. So you can write this thing as integral from minus infinity to infinity of a times e to the minus y squared over 2 dy. All right, all I did was use the fact that you can move a constant into an integral. All right, now what we're going to do is expand this a in terms of x. So a e to the minus y squared over 2 is equal to integral from minus infinity to infinity of e to the minus x squared over 2 dx times e to the minus y squared over 2. So I'm trying to simplify the integrand here. Okay. And we did iterated integrals earlier in the class, and for the purpose of the inside integral, which is this one, this y is just a constant in terms of as far as x is concerned. So we can move this e to the minus y squared inside, just like we moved a inside up here. So y is just a constant. Here. So while we're busy working on the inside integral, or this inside quantity here, y is a fixed thing, so I can move it inside as well, and I end up with integral from minus infinity to infinity of e to the minus x squared over 2, e to the minus y squared over 2 dx. All right, so then the last little trick is that e to the x squared over 2, so this thing ends up being equal to e to the minus x squared plus y squared over 2 inside. So when you put it all together, what you've got is the outer integral minus infinity to infinity, this other integral minus infinity to infinity. So we have a squared is equal to, it seems like we're making our lives a lot more complicated by writing things this way. And one reason I wanted to go through this is I never really had a chance to talk about that volcano problem in class. And this is basically an example of that. So what we're doing is we have some integral where if you draw x squared plus y squared and use the Pythagorean theorem, we have the r squared is equal to x squared plus y squared. And we're trying to do this double integral over the whole plane. So you can break that thing into circles. And the radius is r and the width is dr. And then if you did that homework problem where you're computing the amount of lava that, you know, if you know the density of lava as a distance from the origin, it ends up being the same thing. We're trying to integrate this thing, which only depends on the distance from the origin, over the entire plane. And the way we did the lava problem was write this as the integral from 0 to infinity of 2 pi r times the density times dr. So 2 pi r dr is the area of the ring. Okay, so if you think of the density in that problem as being this, like if the amount of the height of the lava as you go away from the center of the volcano is equal to e to the minus x squared plus y squared over 2 instead of what was in that problem, this is how we would have wanted to integrate that thing. You have 2 pi r, that's the area, 2 pi r dr is the area of the ring, and then this is the height of the function. So that's where the magic came in. You turned it into a double integral, and then you introduced this R factor here from the 2 pi R part of the, or from the circumference of the circle. Okay, so I just wanted to at least talk about something having to do with that distance from the origin, and this seemed like a good example. So, okay, so now how do we take the antiderivative of 2 pi r e to the minus r squared over 2? That's the one we did at the beginning of class. So you say u equals minus r squared over 2, du equals minus 2, or minus r dr, and you'll end up with, so you move this r over, and you'll end up with 2 pi integral from 0 to infinity of, this is a minus e to the minus r squared over 2 times r dr. And now we're ready to do the substitution. So I guess we did this one earlier in the class, but one thing I wanted to say is when you do the u substitution, you can leave the limits as they are. So if in this case, when r equals 0, u is equal to 0, so we end up with 0 as the bottom limit, what should be the top limit? How do we figure out how to change limits when we do a u substitution? So you just if r is going to be infinity, what you do is you plug in infinity here and you find out u is equal to minus infinity squared over 2, or minus infinity. So this is 2 pi 0 to minus infinity minus e to the u du. Did that just throw you off? Suppose I had put the limit down at the beginning. So let's say let's stay right at the beginning here. We had done made it an integral from 0 to b. If I do integral 0 to b of e to the minus r squared over 2 times minus r dr, this is what we're doing. So if I had done this, and then I had done my u substitution where u is equal to minus r squared over 2, and du is equal to minus 2r dr, sorry, minus r dr, the minus r dr turns into a u, so this part's fine. These limits change, though, 0 to something. This does become minus e to the minus u. And what am I supposed to do with the upper limit when I do a u substitution? Do you guys know? So, Can somebody shout out what belongs here? So you're supposed to match up. You know, you have your integration variable. Usually it's been x in the past. When x is equal to a, what you're supposed to plug in for the lower limit is u, or, you know, if u equals g. So when x equals, when I'll do it this way. When r is equal to 0, u is equal to minus 0 squared over 2 equals 0. So you just have to look at the limits of integration, plug it into your u substitution formula, and use that value. So when r equals b, what is u equal to? Yeah, minus b squared over 2. Good. So so when r equals b, we're supposed to have minus b squared over 2 up here. All right. And now we can do this integral. Okay, so we're still talking about the limit as b goes to infinity of, so now the antiderivative of this is just e to the u by itself. We're going from 0 to minus b squared over 2. And all right, so what happens is you plug this in, you'll get e to the minus b squared over 2. And then you'll have minus e to the 0. This was supposed to be a plus u. So this is a minus. Sorry. So it was supposed to be like this, minus here and plus here. And as b goes to infinity, this thing turns into 0, which we discussed earlier. And this turns into 1. So that is how you do the integral here, and then the 2 pi out front, I guess, got lost. So if you carry the 2 pi through, so 2 pi, the integral from 0 to infinity. Well, okay, so a squared is equal to 2 pi, and the result is like this. So what we've just computed is the area under a Gaussian. So that's the bell-shaped curve. And so what you do is, so this is f of x equals e to the minus x squared over 2. And so we just showed that the integral of f of x dx is equal to square root of 2 pi. And so people usually will normalize the function so its integral becomes 1. And the Gaussian is defined as 1 over square root of 2 pi integral from times e to the minus x squared over 2. And its area is 1. All right, so I guess that's the last thing to say about improper integrals. This thing does, it decays very rapidly to 0 because e to the minus x squared goes to 0 very fast. Okay, so have a nice weekend. I'll be away next week, and I'll see you when I get back. Great.